Blog Talk Radio.
When you're down and troubled and you need some love and care and nothing is going right.
So, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up. From Los Angeles, a big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radioland. I am Dave, the caregiver's caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. Yes, folks, I'm the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we're going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. We have an exciting show planned for you today. Anthony DeFelicis, author, speaker, and is currently going through the grief process himself along with his family as a result of the death of his beloved mom and my friend. Heck, we just interviewed her in May. I don't believe it. She was an amazing woman who fought, I think, three different cancers for over a four-year period before she finally left us. So stay tuned. It's going to be a great show. I'm your host today, Dave Nassani, and this show is for caregivers of every kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring, selfless, sacrificial, and are very prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. Learn a lesson from the airlines. Remember them? Every time you board a plane, you tune them out when they start to tell you that if there's an emergency, oxygen mask will fall out of the ceiling, to put your own oxygen mask on first before you help your child with their mask. And the reason they tell you that is because they know you will most likely black out if you don't put your needs above theirs. And then you won't be of any help to anybody. And you know, caregivers are the same way. We also talk about grief and loss here, especially today, and the devastating effects that it can have on us. It kind of automatically throws us into this thing called the grief process. Ouch, that even sounds painful. And it is. But unfortunately, folks, the only way out of the grief process is to go through the grief process. And hopefully we can help you through your grief and loss if you happen to feel like you're stuck. Hey, if this is your first time tuning in, you can learn more about me, my radio podcast, my books, my videos, by going to my website, DaveNass.com, that's Dave, and then the first four letters of my last name, N like Nancy, A like Apple, S like Sam, S like Sam.com. Or you can also put in the name of the show, which is Dave, the caregiver's caregiver.com. So, once you register your visit and you're on my website, I'm going to send you two really neat gifts. First, a copy of my ebook, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. And if that wasn't enough, I'm also going to send you a free report entitled 10 Mistakes That All Caregivers Make That You Shouldn't. Now, don't miss out on these cool freebies worth over 20 bucks. All right, enough of that. Welcome to the show, Tony. Sorry you had to sit through all of that introduction stuff for our first-time listeners. Welcome.
Well, thanks, Dave. Good to be back on your show.
Yes, and I'm so sorry for the circumstances that it's happened upon. You just lost your mother. A wonderful,
yeah.
Wonderful woman.
20 days ago. Yeah, it's to the day she died on August 5th.
Wow. And, you know, we just interviewed her, for those of you that don't know, in May. You should look up that show because that's one of the most amazing shows we ever did. And, Tony, you know, that was the most listened-to show that I've ever done, that one.
Oh, really?
Because it's
well,
such an amazing show. She's such an amazing woman. And we're all going to miss her. But you know what? We're going to see her soon. Soon and very soon, as Andre Crouch used to sing. And I just want to thank you again, Tony, for agreeing to do this interview at the last minute. I know you're still hurting. How are you doing? I know that's such a cliche-ish question to someone who lost someone.
Yeah, you know, what's pretty amazing about the whole ordeal is that the, you know, weeks prior, there's a concentration on her care. And it mounts in its intensity. And then during the last, you know, 3 weeks, couple weeks, to the last 2 weeks, it just becomes very intense as you're trying to get her out of pain and bringing her comfort, but at the same time, you lose her because mentally, in a sense, because of the medication. And, you have that all the way, down to the moment where she passes, and then, within 3 hours, she's picked up, and boom, she's gone from that perspective. And you walk back in the house, and the house is a reflection of her, and you go to the bedroom where she laid down for weeks and weeks, and she's gone. And it is a very rough moment in life. I mean, there was a lot of precious things. I think we'll talk about them. But, just the shift of how it shifts to all of a sudden, you become in this mourning attempted recovery, trying to put the life back together, mm-hmm. especially for my dad. And they were a notebook couple. They loved to the end. It's hard to watch him grieve. And, he's had, pretty good moments and not so great moments. But to answer your question, I'm doing okay. I'm attempting to move forward. But at the same time, you have moments, whether it be a song or, a few things. I opened up a jewelry box of hers and saw a note that I wrote her when I was 12 years old that she had there that talked about me writing about when she lost her dad, about information that I had even forgot about that she told me as a child. And I wrote to her about how sad it was that she was holding her dad's hand when he passed into heaven. And she had kept that note from when I was a 11, 12-year-old and put it in her jewelry box. And she has a lot of jewelry, but I just happened to go in one of the boxes, and she had that and a note that I wrote her when I was 21, too, just a tribute to her when I was 21, which is, a few decades ago. So, but, those are the kinds of things that, just strike you and you don't know, but it brings up the emotion and the grieving, and it's good, it's healthy, but it's also hard, too, so.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Tony, I'm so sorry for your pain. I miss Jen as well. I miss knowing that I won't be seeing her again this side of heaven. And I especially am sorry for your dad's loss, and I know he must be taking this very rough because they were the notebook couple. I saw it and I mentioned it. I don't know if you were making notation to that before I even mentioned it on your Facebook post. But, they are so in love, and they just were so dedicated to each other. How many years were they married?
They were together for 63, and this November would have been had their 60th anniversary. So, it was a lot of
there
years.
Not too many people who can boast that.
No.
Wow.
No,
why don't we take the first few minutes of my questions and just talk a little bit about your mom and her incredible life. If you think you can, that is. I know it's kind of emotional for you. For those of you, listeners who don't know who she was and why we keep saying she's amazing.
Yeah, for sure. So you just want to talk about her life and...
Yeah, take about 4 minutes or so and just tell us who Jan DeFelicis was and why it's such a loss to everyone who knew her here on Earth, 4 or 5 minutes, something like that.
Yeah, well, Mom was a product of Burbank, and she grew up, and she was in Burbank, and she lost her dad at a young age, in her teens, I believe, late teens, actually. And she was a singer, and a excellent singer. She led the concerts at John Burroughs High School. We got a bunch of pictures of her on stage singing, which was also fun because she was in the first choir, and then my daughter went through Burroughs and Powerhouse and on the same stage as my mother sang. So that was really a special thing. And my mom had a voice. I can remember her singing as a child, and she, in the 60s, we went to Village Church in Burbank, and there was a music pastor that came there called Bob. His name was Bob Shepherd, and he had a musical group called Bob Shepherd and the Blue Meadows. And we found the album, which is pretty crazy. And my mom joined the group just after the album was made, but she toured with them singing all the songs. And I can remember, you know, as a young boy, I don't know, maybe 10, 11, 12, you know, going with my mom and having her, watching her sing in her concerts. And then she would also sing solos. And the neat thing was is that we were able to sing these songs to her three times. Well, I think the last time was a tribute to her, but Steve Lively, who's a worship pastor, dropped by to the hospital in Ventura. It was my mom, dad, my sister, and Steve, and he knew all her old songs, so he sang them to her, and it was like, you know, nobody could bring someone like there to sing those songs that she knew from the 60s. And so he sang the songs to her, and she was really ministered. And then mom sang some of the songs that were most favorite to her, like My Eyes on the Sparrow, or His Eyes on the Sparrow. My friend Steve Lively, his wife was in a bike race, a cyclist race in the Santa Barbara area, and he just dropped me a note. He's a worship pastor in Reseda, and he just said, you know, can I come by and visit your parents? And so he did, and when he came, we just told him about my mom's group, and he just happened to know songs from the 60s. So he sang a lot of the songs that meant a lot to my mom, which was a God moment that he brought Steve there at the hospital. And then my mom went and sang some of the songs for us, and we were able to record them, and we put a couple of them on Facebook just to show how she was ministering even in the last days of her life. And so that was a neat time. And then, of course, right before she passed, actually it was she passed on a Tuesday morning, like 4 in the morning, so it's really like Monday night, Tuesday morning. But the Monday, she just slept like an angel, but the night before or the day before, Sunday, before she passed on a Tuesday, prior to that Sunday, she was really heavily medicated. And they say sometimes that before someone passes, they have a surge. And that surge is that they're able to kind of wake up and connect and sometimes talk. Mm-hmm. Well, my mom didn't talk, but her eyes were open and focused on us. As if she was not on medication. And there was three points there where she gave my dad a kiss. Her lips actually came up and kissed him. When my son and daughter walked in the room, Tyson and Jenna, she almost had her mouth moved and kind of like smiled, which was something we hadn't seen in a while. And then my brother Gene and my sister Tristy and I had a time when we were just around her, just thanking her for her, you know, the beautiful person that she was and the wonderful mother she was and how what she meant to us and how precious it was that she passed down her faith to us, that we could pass it down to our kids and so on. And we were just really sharing those meaningful times with her, and tears came out of her eyes. That was probably one of the most powerful moments we had besides when she actually left. And then, of course, all these, Patty, my ex-wife, we had this time of worship on the bed that night, Sunday night before she passed, and Patty led us in worship, and her family was there, and my girlfriend Jamie was there, and we all kind of just lifted up worship songs to the Lord. And it was really, really a precious time. And Patty sang His Eyes on the Sparrow, and she also sang one other song. It slips my mind right now, but and I believe she even sang I Can Only Imagine. But it was a really...
We really had a special last night with her.
Yeah. The whole family was around the table, I mean the bed, and, you know, and then the morning she left, we can talk about that a little later, but... that was also a very precious time. But the thing was, is those songs were of her childhood where she sang when we were growing up, were surrounding her on her final days. And even in her memorial, as Patty sang the songs in her memorial service, so did Steve Lively came actually in the last minute saying after the message by Pastor Rob Perkins from Coastline Bible, Steve Lively came and saying, I can only imagine after the message, and oh my goodness, it was like, take me to heaven now, Lord.
Thank heaven, yeah.
Mom was just looking down, I'm sure, just in tears of joy.
And for those who, I'm sorry for interrupting, but for those who don't know the story, let me just briefly share with them, you know, when Jan and Gus, her husband, were still dating, he got into this automobile accident because somehow it was late at night and he fell asleep at the wheel, and it was almost like a scene through of Chevy Chase's Vacation where the car is just taken off and no one's, you know, directing it.
And, you know, my dad fell asleep, woke up with the telephone pole in front of him, made a sharp left. The back of the car hit the telephone pole. My mom was asleep on his lap back in those days because he didn't have seat belts. And so the door opened up, and she was, like, swept out and then grabbed onto the door, and the door was swinging. While she was hanging on, the car was going 80, 85 miles an hour. She thought she was going to be sucked under the car when the door came back in. So she let go when she was the door was out. And then at that point, she rolled to a sitting position, and my dad crashed and dashed back and went to help her up, but she couldn't move. And so she rushed to the hospital. My dad actually fainted in the hospital, and he had to be hospitalized himself. She was 3 months pregnant with me, and she'd broken her pelvis in a number of places, and they said she would never walk again. And they said that because of all the x-rays back then that they took and all the trauma, that her baby, the doctors told her to expect her baby to be lost and not make it. And so she, and they, again, like you mentioned, they told her that she would never walk again. And my mom had amazing faith. And all along through her life, she went through a lot of challenges, even in her childhood, that she overcame. She was a very tough-hearted, she was beautiful-hearted, but she had a tough part of her character that she was very tenacious. She was a fighter. And she told the doctor she was going to walk again, and she believed God that was going to allow her to walk again, and she believed God that her baby would be okay. And so she did walk again, and she was in the hospital, I guess, another 3 months in traction. I got these pictures, and you wouldn't believe it. It's like, you know, seeing those cartoons when somebody's all wrapped up in bandages and their arms and legs are up in the sky with, all this apparatus. I mean, that's what she looked like. And she couldn't move, she had to be moved slightly because bed sores because she couldn't move. And they didn't even have TVs then. And back then they didn't allow people, I think, only an hour of visitation time, hour or 2 hours of the night. And she had to stay in there by herself. And it was, it was a different day back then, but she was there till she was 6 months pregnant, and then they let her come home, and then 3 months later she had me. And, throughout my young age, she said, Tony, there's a reason you're here today. God wants you here, and he has, more or less a plan for your life. So you trust him, because you would not be here if it wasn't for him. And so that was something that she, she gave my brother and my sister and me something to impart the faith to. And one of the things that I grew up in my entire life with knowing that it was that, God had me here for a reason. I didn't know what, and I ended up being in ministry for, 30 years. Part of that whole calling was something that my mom instilled in my heart, I believe, as a child. So, yeah, she was special.
Yeah, we're definitely going to miss her. We're going to take a short break, a couple of minutes or so, and we'll get back and continue this interview. Thanks so much.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships. Available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Hear what Lynn Barrington, best-selling author of Daddies and Daughters, published by Simon & Schuster, has to say about it. You think you have it bad? Read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you will be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy Award winner, the godfather of contemporary gospel music, Andre Crouch? This book will be an encouragement to anyone who reads it. Charlene just won't let the promises of God go. She's hanging on to her positive, godly attitude, and I look forward to the day when she will receive all that she's believing that God will do for her. In the meantime, she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. Her smile has gotten just as big as it was before her stroke. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. I'm glad to know her and her testimony. Read this book. You will be encouraged regardless of what you're going through. So get your copy of One Arm, One Leg, and 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. But if you purchased it from the author's website, Dave and Charlene Nassani will personally autograph your own copy. Just go to DaveNass.com. That's Dave, and then N like Nancy, A like Apple, S like Sam, S like Sam.com. DaveNass.com. Oh, and while you're on his website, don't forget to leave your name and email address so that Dave can send you his free report, 10 Mistakes All Caregivers Make That You Shouldn't, just for visiting the site. There are a lot of resources, videos, and links to his radio podcast. Again, DaveNass.com. That's N-A-S-S. Now let's rejoin Dave Nassani and his guest on Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Program on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.
And we're back, and we're talking to Anthony DeFelicis, author. And you are an author, even though you haven't published your book yet. You're writing it, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Good for you.
That I am. Thanks, Dave.
So, Tony, how's your dad doing? I know they were so in love, and I know he misses her terribly. I mean, how's he making it day by day? What's going on with him? I know he has his own health issues as well.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you picture the Notebook scene where, you know, the two are laying down and the shot is from above looking down and their heads are looking up to the heavens while their heads are together, mm-hmm. That more or less was... you know, the final couple weeks, even before that, but certainly the final couple weeks, that was a picture of my mom and dad. My dad, even when he had I guess it was maybe 3 weeks before, dates are all kind of, you know, a little mm-hmm. bit foggy right now, but, you know, my dad got a kidney infection, which is sometimes very dangerous for a person that age. They can actually pass away themselves, and we thought, hey, Dad's trying mm-hmm. to beat Mom, because he wanted to go first. My brother-in-law, Bruce, surprised my mom at home and brought Dad, kind of escaped him out of the rehab, Victoria Recovery Home or whatever it was, and brought him to see my mom, and she was just thrilled. But, you know, that... Once again, you know, they were cuddling in bed, you know, with everybody there with their heads together, and you know, and in the final weeks, couple weeks, that position was something that you could walk in every night and see them holding hands with the with their heads together, you know, it was precious. But during the last few days when we knew Mom's time, well, actually, we thought still she may have had some weeks ahead of her, so we were surprised as she went as soon as she did. But Dad really was grieving with her, and to the point where he finally told her, it was really huge, he told her that it was okay for her to go, that he would be okay, and that was a huge step for my dad to make. But, you know, you can say those words, and then, you know, all of a sudden you realize what you said, and sometimes you can want to hang on. And I think emotionally, for a couple of days after that, he didn't want to let go, and I think my mom knew that. But he did a lot of grieving with her, and we were really concerned about him, and because, you know, his love was just so strong, and he just did not want her to go, you know, without him, even though he did have the comfort of knowing, you know, that she was going to go to heaven. But he was not ready. But one of the things that I've told him, and I continue to tell him, that, you know, I know that my dad did not have a choice as to who went first. But there's something about agreeing with the will of God that it is God's will that Mom went first. And they proved it because Dad's still here. But I've told my dad that how much greater it is that Mom went from this life to heaven, to stand before God, to worship God, to bow down before God, to dance before the Lord, and she is in that spiritual sense of communion and spiritual intercourse with the Lord. You know that she mm-hmm. is the most euphoric thing that probably anybody. Well, it is that anyone will experience is when we get to see him as he is. And I was telling my dad that you know, instead of you going first and Mom experiencing the pain that you are now suffering, you know, what a gift you gave her in a sense by agreeing with the will of God. And the pain that you're experiencing now is something that Mom would have experienced if you had gone. But rather, mm-hmm. what a gift it is that, in a sense, you can agree with God and that, give that to her. And even though his pain is great, he knows that Mom never experienced that. And also the fact that, you know, as we keep telling him, you know, these are abstract things, but, you know, I can only imagine. But it says in the Word that a day is 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is a day when you get into God. So perhaps in a blink of an eye, we'll all be there with Mom. But on this side, you know, it's a little bit longer. So, you know, he had those days of mourning, and then, you know, when she actually did pass, I think, in a sense, we took it all tougher than he did initially, and we thought, gosh, he's really doing well. You know, it kind of all boomerangs and comes around again, and his nights have been tough, especially in the first couple of weeks. He being in the bed by himself, and we had family there all the time, but he still had a rough time at nights and didn't sleep well, and then he would sleep mostly between 5 a.m. and 2 in the afternoon. That's when he would sleep pretty soundly, but, you know, up at night, it was just tough for him to go to sleep.
And he's an amazing person in his own right. I mean, they both were very, very amazing. Tell us briefly, you know, his accolades and how they changed the neighborhood of Burbank by living in their home there, all their neighbors, and then when they moved to Ventura, how they just changed the whole neighborhood.
My dad was, you know, he was one of the pillars in Burbank youth sports. You know, he coached 100 teams in 50 years in the city of Burbank, and most of those seasons were three teams in a year. So we didn't do much vacationing at all. Mom had a lot of sacrificing, but most of those teams, Mom was behind them, you know, just doing the administration, being a team manager, team mom, and you know, she started the cheerleading for the Burbank Viking Tackle Football. My dad was one of the pillars starting the Burbank Viking Tackle Football program. And in 1968, and that program still exists here in Burbank. And, of course, my dad, like I said, coached in the Park and Recreation, so he was on the first set of individuals that were inducted into the City of Burbank, Burbank Athletic Federation Walk of Fame. And about 3 years later, I was inducted myself because of what I was able to accomplish at Emmanuel Church. So it was a real honor to be to join my dad in that prestigious place in the city of Burbank. That is something my kids and our grandkids can see, as long as an earthquake doesn't take it out, but we're in cement there.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of like...
A legacy.
You know,
you both have left a legacy for the future.
Yeah, but my mom's legacy was more or less the faith behind it all. I mean, my dad was a street fighter in Denora, Pennsylvania. And he basically, you know, I think his uncle was in the mafia, and my grandpa ran numbers. So, you know, we come from the Italian side.
Yeah.
And my dad, my grandmother came to my dad and said, you have to leave Pennsylvania, because if not, you're going to get killed, because you got too many guys after you, because you beat up too many guys. So it was true. So me and three friends head out to Southern California, and then when he met my mom said, well, he asked her on the date, he said, if you want, you can take me on the date, but first thing we're going to do is you can take me to church. So my dad went to my mom's church and ended up talking to the pastor, and they led him to the Lord. And my dad, you know, had a pretty intense competitive side. He was very athletic and a gifted athlete. As a matter of fact, his high school football team in 2008 was inducted into the Western Pennsylvania Hall of Fame as being the best high school football team in Western Pennsylvania, history of Western Pennsylvania. So that's the kind of pedigree that we come from with the athletic thing. But when he came here, he found the Lord and through my mom and her faith, and somehow it all became right for him, and his heart softened. And my dad's dad never told my dad that he loved him, but my dad made it a priority to lavish love, unconditional love, on his three children and his wife. And my mom said, even in one of the most precious things in your last program that you had my mom on, and I don't know if it was May or June, but the last 10, 15 minutes of the show, she talked about what my dad's love meant to her, the affection, the devotion, just the unconditional love that she never experienced, because she was raised from a stout English family and that didn't express those kinds of things. So, you know, my mom was able to receive that from my dad. And so, you know, growing up in the city of Burbank, they were involved in church and as well as sports, and they would throw parties, and my mom would throw dinner parties for 25 people and have these extravagant displays of dishes and decorations, and you know, she would do it for every holiday and every you just drive by the house and you knew what holiday was coming up just by looking at her house. And she loved to celebrate life, and she would do all the administration, and my dad would do all the relational work, and he would, you know, get up and be the life of the party, and she would be there right with him, but she would have every detail planned out, you know, and that was the kind of thing they did. And as they went through the sports and through church and just through the neighborhood and their lives, people really felt, people that didn't have a family and people that had families, but they just felt like my mom and dad became their second parents. And so they have right now, you know, just loads. I mean, there's different levels of closeness, but they have a lot of stepchildren, stepsons, and stepdaughters. And it's really a product.
And I'm one of them. I'm one of them.
Yeah. And it's a product of the Lord, what he did in their marriage and what he did in their relationship and how they made people feel comfortable and how they included people and how they just made people feel loved and special. And you know, and I look back now and it's funny, you take so much for granted when you're going through it, because that's all you know that is. I mean, my parents would come to my athletic events and kiss me in public, you know, even in high school. And my dad would kiss me in the lips, you know, in high school, you know, like in public, you know. He'd be at every practice, every game, and I'd kind of feel weird, you know, at first. But then all of a sudden I said, no, I don't need to feel weird. Man, that's an awesome thing. My dad loves me, you know. And my mom, you know, she knew the Lord, but she did have this performance, kind of high performance expectation of excellence in her life. And my dad had more of a loving heart, even though he was an intense competitor himself. But he had this more, you know, of lovey-feely part of him. And and it was, you know, it was a good balance, I think, for us, you know, and it was for me. But looking back now, you know, I can see that my mom was able to even express so much more of that affection and love that, you know, she kind of was kind of strange for her, and she was able to express it more when the grandkids came around, and she kind of had a new start, as it were, and she, you know, did her best to lavish that love and affection on each one of her seven grandchildren, Tyson and Jenna and Brooke and Nicole and Tanner and Miles and Dylan. She just loved those grandkids, and so that was really special for her. But yeah, they did grow up in Burbank, and you know, they were pillars in Burbank. And then about 10 years ago, my mom decided she wanted to retire, and retire with some money. So my sister talked them into selling their Burbank house, and they moved to a senior community in Ventura, about 5 minutes drive from the beach, and they got a lovely little modular home, almost bigger. I think it is bigger than the one they had in Burbank, in some respects, because it could house all my mom's knickknacks and decorations and still have walking lanes. she loved her stuff. But anyway, you know, one of the seniors.
And it was
a
pretty dead neighborhood when they moved. It was a pretty dead.
Yeah.
Sorry for interrupting. It was a pretty dead neighborhood when they moved in, right?
Yeah, it was really dead and dull. And they came, and there's a rec center, and they got involved. My mom became the chairman of the board of, residents, and then she started a newsletter. And my dad was calling bingo, which you know, kind of was the closest thing from his Pennsylvania lottery that he used to love to do. So he would
run
in
the numbers. Huh?
yeah, exactly. He would call the bingo, and my mom would organize the whole thing, and you know, they became focal points. And my mom then all of a sudden became the activities leader, and she would make, you know, events to movies and restaurants and Vegas and you know, wherever they would go, my mom would be organizing for everyone. And they got to know this guy named Gil Valencia, who is a band player who played also at the memorial service. And they almost became like kind of like groupies, and they had like 30 of their seniors go and follow this guy around. And when he played, it was a fun thing. I mean, they did it, and they danced. Actually, something that was really special. It was about 3 weeks before my mom passed. She got this one night where she just felt pretty good, and so it was my brother-in-law Bruce had a birthday party at Piranha's in Ventura, and Gil was playing there. So we all went down there, and during the performance, Gil had my dad sing a song, September, I think it's called, and he sang it to my mom. And then after that, Gil sang the song Unforgettable, which was my mom's favorite song, secular song, and mom and dad got up and danced, and we have that on video. And they just are both so happy and smiling and waving, and it was just kind of a really neat thing. And then on the way home, I had the car keys, and they left without me, so they didn't have get in the house. And so them and the neighbors hung out in my mom's big front porch, and they had about an hour and a half of just sharing and socializing with the neighborhood. And we didn't know, but that really was the last big hurrah for my mom in a public sense. So that was really special.
Everything happens for a reason.
Yeah.
Tony, thank you for sharing all of that. You know, I thought it was important that we mentioned so that everybody can just really feel, you know, how special they were and the pain that you must be going through. So I want to take a break here, another couple of minutes, and we'll be back, and we'll be talking about the actual grief process, you know, the denial and the bargaining and the anger, the depression, the acceptance. So we'll be back in a couple of minutes to talk with that.
Thank you.
Tune in to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver program every Saturday at 3:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, only on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. The whole purpose of this show is to help support you in your caregiving responsibilities so that you take care of yourself first, so that you don't burn out, because your loved ones are counting on you to take care of them. And Dave Nassani should know. He's been a caregiver to his wife for over 19 years after she suffered a debilitating stroke that left her severely speech-impaired and paralyzed on her right side. After a two-year grieving period, she came to the realization that she had to play the cards that she was dealt. And so she decided to reinvent herself and attempt to do all the things that she was famous for doing before her stroke, like gourmet cooking, hosting dinner parties for 12, interior decorating, sewing, and too many other hobbies and activities to mention here. She now basically makes us normal people look like whiners and complainers by continuing to do almost everything she did before her stroke. But in essence, she does it with one arm and one leg tied behind her back, and she might as well have duct tape over her mouth too, since she can't speak. And she does it all with her amazing positive attitude and smile. So what's your excuse for not playing the cards that you were dealt and turning those lemons into lemonade? Dave has been so inspired by Charlene's attitude that it inspired him to reach out to caregivers by writing 3 books and starting this radio program to make sure that caregivers have a place to go to get the support that they need in order to avoid burnout and to get through the grief process. Now get ready to learn how you can avoid burnout and survive grief. It's Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. And here again is your host, Dave Nassani.
And we are back with Tony DeFelicis, author, speaker, and a good friend who's going through the grief process, lost his mother, who was an amazing person. And we're just talking about grief today. And Tony, like I said to you, I wanted you to lay a foundation of you know, just who your parents were and how special they were. Get a feeling of the intensity and the level of your grief, because obviously people grieve no matter who dies, but when your parents are really, really special, it just hurts more.
Yeah,
and I don't even know if you're familiar with the grief process and the elements of it, but, you know, it starts usually with denial. This isn't really happening. Anger. Oh, my God, it is happening. And you're angry at maybe the person for leaving or the doctor for doing something wrong, or angry at yourself for not doing more or not saying something that you wanted to say. And then bargaining, you know, it's hard to bargain with death, but you know, a lot of people bargain with God. You know, why did you take her, and this and that? Or depression, you know, just realizing that you have no control over anything. And can you tell me, did you see your dad or yourself or your siblings or anyone who's involved there actually going through the processes of the grief, you know, and the denial and the anger, the bargaining, the depression? And maybe you can share your experiences with that.
Yeah. Well, first I'd like to just kind of mention that the night that she passed, it was 3:30 in the morning, and my girlfriend Jamie had a dream, and she came running in and to my brother and stepped over to my dad, and my dad said, "Who is this? Who are you?" And she just said, "I had a dream," and my brother woke up, and then she ran and got me, and my mom was breathing 52 breaths a minute, which is pretty intense, and then when it went down under 30, we went and got my sister, and the five of us were all gathered there, my mom, my brother, my sister, Jamie, and my dad, and her breaths went down to 10, and then 5 breaths per minute, and then she breathed 2 times, and then she didn't breathe anymore. And that moment was something that I'll never forget. As a pastor for 30 years, I've done a lot of funerals, and I've seen friends in caskets that I've officiated funerals and memorial service. But you know, when it's your own mother, it's something that I'll never ever forget. You know, there's a quote that says, love knows not its own depth until the hour of separation. And that was extremely true for us, you know. And since that time, there has been a lot of disbelief. I mean, like I say, when you see a picture or you read a note or for instance, believe it or not, my dad sometimes cannot sleep, and it was the other night. I just jumped in bed with him, and we were laying on top of the covers, and he was just, you know, grieving. And I put on your show,
really?
And we listened to it together. And, you know, I have a couple phone messages that I have from my mom, but, you know, there's nothing like my mom talking about my dad's love for her, and which was the final 15 minutes. And what was funny that during the it was an hour and a half, something like that. And during it, my dad fell asleep for a minute. And then when he woke up, he heard you talking. And for some reason, he thought it was live, and he started yelling at you, like talking at you and joyful, laughing, making jokes at you. And I said, Dad, this is a recording. So he goes, Oh, yeah. So we kicked in. I love him. Yeah, but it meant so much to him, you know, that he had that and that he could hear my mom share those words with him. But the reality is that, you know, we have our faith, and our faith says to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord, and nothing can separate us from the love of Christ. And that's our living hope. And, you know, for me, there's kind of a testimony that if my mom went through this kind of pain and endurance, and has crossed over, what do I have to be fearful of? I mean, disease, mm-hmm. I mean, she already had that, you know, and it's kind of like, you know, what we believe about Christ. You know, Christ went to the cross. You know, what do we have to fear? Because he's shown, been the example, and he's gone through it. But to actually see my mother experiencing the radical pain of cancer and going through it, you know, it gives us this hope that, you know, people that don't know the Lord, I don't know how they deal with this death thing. But to answer your question is that, yes, certainly there's moments, you know, I'd like to say, oh, you know, Jesus, you know, is in heaven and everything's okay. And we do have that confidence and that assurance, and that's something that no one can take away from us. But there's the other part of that is that, you know, her physical body is not here. You know, hearing her voice on your show or the phone message, or seeing a picture, or seeing what she wrote, you know, or going to a place that you remember she was at, or what you did together. And that's mostly what my dad went through more than us. But, you know, all of us have those times where we, you know, gosh, it really happened. You know, death's a reality. And I can't go talk to my mom. And that's one of the poems I wrote her. I said, I hope she's always there on the other end of the phone. Well, that's no longer possible. You know, I can't call her up and hear her voice anymore. You know, that's my, you know, my reality in my life. And those are shocking, living denial, that kind of thing. But the other day, I was going to go with my dad. We're taking him out and to dinner, and then we're going to go see the pastor. And the pastor, we were going to talk about the memorial service. But as I was out there with him, you know, my dad's 87 years old, when we talked about issues, he had this, like, really negative thing that was coming through him about different people. He was just kind of really agitated and saying some curse words that you really hear out of my dad. You know, I was kind of rolling with it with him, and finally it just became, you know, five or six times in a row, and I said, Dad, I said, you seem really, really angry. I said, are you missing Mom? You know, and we were at, I think it was Subway, you know, before we went to see the pastor. And you know, my dad just broke down and said, yeah, everywhere I go, I see her and think of her. And he says that it hurts so bad. And all I could do is say I understand and hold him and say it's okay to be angry, you know, because he was. Absolutely. And it's okay, and he's got to go through it. And and I felt God.
Not even knowing, knowing who you're angry at.
Yeah, you know, and you know, I guess sometimes it's God, and we can even be angry at God. God can handle it, but the reality is you know, that's probably not something consciously that he would say, I'm right now angry at God. He's just angry that his wife is not there. And so, you know, there is more, sometimes it's an agitation, not even anger, it's an agitation. You know, my dad's got a heart of gold, and he's a very loving man, and, you know, that's why God used him so much. But, you know, I appreciate prayers for prayer for him, because I don't know if he's with us another year, 2 years, 5 years, 7 years. You know, he's 87 right now. And the thing is that, you know, that he has to carry through this. You know, in his quiet moments, it's been rough. It's been really rough for him. He misses her a lot. One time we came out and he was sitting at the dining room table and we had these beautiful programs made up for the, or bulletins or brochures, whatever you want to call them, for the memorial service. And the picture that was on there, given to the gift, and he had the picture up. He had his breakfast there, and he had the picture up, and he was kind of having his morning breakfast with my mom, you know. And, you know, you look at that, and it just breaks your heart, because you see how much love that he had for her. And yet, on the other hand, you know, we are thankful for where she is and the faith that we have. But, you know, I have to tell my dad and remind him, Dad, you're still here for us. God has you here for a reason. You're here for your grandkids. You're here to spread the love that Mom would have you spread. So, you know, we need you. That's what we have to tell him. We need you. Yeah. Because sometimes I think, you know, he would rather check out and be in heaven. And I know he would.
Sure.
So, yeah, it's rough.
Wow. So, Tony, I know you're talking about God and spiritual things. Tell us briefly what your spiritual background was and how does it affect your concept of death? Because not everyone listening maybe believes in God, or, you know, maybe they believe in reincarnation. Maybe they believe in, you know, after you die, it's just black, nothing, you know. So tell us briefly, you know, your spiritual perception of things.
Well, we believe that Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but through me. And he's pretty narrow-minded. He's either the Lord, a liar, or a lunatic. And I choose to call him my Lord and my Savior. And we believe that man cannot go before God in his sinful, which just sin means missing the mark of perfection. It's an archery term. And that we need to have Jesus as our sacrifice. He died for our sins so that we don't get God's judgment. Matter of fact, God put his judgment on Jesus so that we can walk into the presence of God, a holy God, without sin, and be accepted by him, because Jesus' righteousness or his holiness is attributed to us. And so we don't have to worry about the judgment of God. Matter of fact, it says that nothing can separate us from the love of God, neither height nor depth, nor angels or principalities, demons, height or depth or anything can separate us from the love of God. And it also says in the Bible that in 1 Peter, that we are protected, our salvation is protected by the power of God. And so those things are the recipient of a Christian, and a Christian becomes a Christian simply by placing their faith in Jesus. It's not by being a good person, because we're not. We've all sinned.
Mm-hmm.
And matter of fact, if we sin just 3 times a day in 1 year's time, that's over 1,000 sins, and that's just at 3 times a day, a thought, a word, or anything else. And, you know, I'm 56, almost 57. That would be just at 3 times a day, about 56,000 crimes before the Lord. And I know in my heart that I've thought, if sin is a thought, a deed, or a word, you know, I've done multiple times 50,000. So coming before a holy God, I don't have to worry about that because Jesus has taken my sin and placed it on the cross so that I can come and enter into his glory blameless and in no condemnation. It says there's no condemnation for those who love Christ Jesus. So the bottom line is to answer your question that a Christian doesn't need to fear death because the sting of death has been conquered through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. So that's something that every Christian should know with confidence. It says these things are written that in order that you may know, it says in 1 John chapter 5, 13, that know you have eternal life. And so that's the difference between a Christian and I think anyone else, because most religions, actually probably all religions, they all, it's about works or doing something yourself to attain this higher level. And Christianity is just the opposite, is you can do nothing. All you can just open up your heart and believe in Jesus by faith. And that is exactly what my mom passed down to us, and we received it age 7, 5, whatever, the Good News Club, and something that, you know, no sin that I can commit is beyond being forgiveness, finding the forgiveness in Jesus. If we confess our sins, he is faithful and righteous to forgive us our sins and cleanse us of all unrighteousness. So that's something that a Christian can celebrate, that to be absent from the body is to be praising the Lord, and we will be able to see God as he is in a place where there's no longer any death or pain or agony. That's all been removed. And so that's where my mom is. And so, you know, when we live this life, our flesh doesn't want to die because it wants to hang on to this life. But the reality is once we die, our spirit goes before God's presence, and then soon he's going to give us a resurrected body, a new body, where we'll live with him for eternity in a very sinless state. Well, we'll reign with him. And that's quite an awesome thought. So, you know, when you look at this world, you know, and you look at, you know, terrorist groups and ISIS and Christians being persecuted, and I see my mom's just passing, you know, that quick, you know, into the real reality of what our faith is, what she taught us, all of a sudden it has something, it makes an impact, and you realize, man, our faith is not just, you know, just a faith that you know, the old gospel story. No, it is reality. It's real. It is to be lived every day. And, you know, you experience something like what watching your mom pass from this life to the next, and there's just something that God did in that moment. There's a quote that I just love that I saw recently, and you know, I don't know where God's going to lead my life, my brother, my sister, or anybody touched from my mom's life, but there's a quote I'm going to mention this. It says, God often uses our deepest pain as the launching pad of our greatest calling. And I don't know, you know, I've had a lot of pain in my life, but the depth of love that when you lose somebody that you care that much about, there's a depth of pain that you know, you experience that, you know, I guess it's when Jesus went to rise Lazarus from the dead, his good friend, you think, why did he cry? You know, he's going to rise him from the dead. Sure. And yet Jesus wept first. And I think it's because he understood the depth of pain, the sting of death. And yet he empathized and then raised him up. And so that's the living faith that every Christian has. And I can't imagine anybody living this life without knowing the Lord in that level.
Well said. Now, you've been a pastor for many, many years. I know I met you at Emmanuel Church in Burbank under the leadership of Stephen Gould and then Neil Brower. And you did a lot of things there, but I think the thing you were probably most famous for is you directed the football teams, right? And I was there as well. My daughter was a cheerleader. And I just can't tell you how many parents came into that church. I know you could probably tell me, because of that football team. Because, you know, football is a very competitive, especially kids football. And parents can be really, really overly competitive for their kids. And you and I have both heard the other teams that we were playing against, how some of those parents just are over the line, yelling at their kids, and, man, that was a terrible pass. What's the matter with you, boy? Wait till I get you home, you know. Just bad stuff, you know what I mean? My gosh, it's a game. It's supposed to be fun. And yet your team, it was like night and day. The way you got, oh, that's okay, guys, next time, Nick, you know, good pass anyway, you know. They dropped the ball. And it's like so many parents would come over and say, why are you guys so nice? And then you had an opportunity to share, well, you know, Emmanuel Church, your card, and they would be interested enough to come and check out the church and say, well, my gosh, if this is how they treat kids on the ball field, I want to see what they're preaching behind the pulpit. On that briefly.
Well, if you think about it, you know, it was kind of the marriage between my dad and my mom. And I don't want to be, you know, over-exaggerated here, but if you really think about it, my mom is the administrator, and she was the one that loved the Lord. My dad was the upfront guy, and he was the one that loved athletics, you know, before he loved the Lord. And so the best of those two things, you know, if you think about if the Lord came now, if he wanted to reach the most the masses, he would come as an athlete or a musician or a singer. Because those two venues are huge platforms in our society. And so what I saw is, you know, when I was a youth, you know, teaching and working for the Burbank Park and Recreation, is a lot of people win at all cost, you know, to the extreme where kids were degraded. And, you know, it was just a bad scene with parents and attitudes. And I said, we got to do something. There's got to be something better. So when I was in Northridge, I did my thesis on can the family ministries of a church attain the church goals through sports? And so that's what I did it on, and I started applying it. We started with one team, 15 kids, who were all from the community, and 7 coaches from the church. And, you know, 10 years down the road, there was over 22 teams and about 3,000 people involved in some degree through our banquets or through our own, you know, ministries through the church. And God used it in a huge, huge way. And then, you know, at one point I was also asked by Ralph Drollinger to be a co-chairman for the church track of Sports Outreach America, the national conference. And that was a really fun season just to see how that sports program impacted the community. Of course, after that, I became the executive pastor, and I kind of moved away from that ministry. But yeah, that was a great season of life for me personally and a lot of people who was part of that program.
Yeah, and you wore a lot of hats as a pastor, I know. And the good news for some fortunate church is that you are currently unemployed and that you're looking for an opportunity. So if anybody out there in Radio Land knows of any church that's looking for a very talented pastor, especially one that's knowledgeable about how to bring a sports program into the church to build membership, this is your man. So, Tony, if somebody wants to get a hold of you, what is your contact information? Email or whatever.
Well, they can call 818-642-5096. That's my cell, or my email is exactedtd@aol.com.
Say that over one more time in case it cut out one more time, a phone number and email.
Yeah, phone number is, cell phone is 818-642-5096. And my email address is E as in Edward, X as in X-ray, E as in Edward, C as in cat, T as in touch, and D as in down, touchdown, at AOL.com, exact TD.
Well, Tony, thank you again for allowing me to interview you, and thank you for my listening audience for tuning in every Wednesday at noon Pacific Standard Time. And don't forget that all of our shows, including this one and the one that I had with his mother, are recorded podcasts that you can listen to on our website, iTunes. I don't think iTunes is set up yet, but it will be soon. And that web address, again, is davenass.com, N-A-S-S. And when you're on the site, don't forget to register your visit so you can get our free gift that we will give to you, the book and the free report. So thank you again, everybody. Thank you, Tony, and thank you. We will see you again Wednesday at noon. God bless everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific, 3 o'clock Eastern, to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process, right here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.